Okay, folks, Elvin Shamrock here. Once again, welcome to our bi-weekly teleseminar. And for those people that are new, just very briefly, the way we do it, we have people volunteer to be on the hot seat and to face questions, to submit cases of concern, questions that they may have, and we discuss them. It's really totally unscripted, and the conversation goes wherever it goes. 99.99999% of the time, even though the question is raised by just one candidate, it's invariably relevant to everyone listening in. I think there's only been one or two occasions in 20 years that I opted to discuss the specifics of a case with a candidate off the teleconference because it wasn't relevant to everyone else. But it is otherwise relevant to everyone else. Today we have an exception, though. The exception is no one submitted any cases to us. So, folks, I want to tell you, it's a poor showing for this year of candidates. This is a rarity. It does happen, but not common. And I want to, again, encourage all of you to submit cases. So in the absence of any specific cases, since you've all signed on and waited for this, I'm going to share with you just briefly a few issues that you need to be considering now. And then when I'm finished, I'm going to try and open up to everyone, and hopefully there won't be too much background noise. If there is, it'll be impossible. We won't be able to do it, but we'll give it a try. So let me share with you a few issues that you need to keep in mind. Number one, please make sure that you have registered for the exam. I don't know the details of the deadlines. I don't have them with me right now. But there's a deadline to registering. And I've seen every now and then a candidate who doesn't realize this. And their whole program for the early years in practice is put off 1 year because they can't take the exam. So please, registration is open. It's been open for several weeks now. Please make sure you have registered. The next thing I want to talk about again is the case list. I'm going to unashamedly get a plug in for ExamPro at this point. And the plug is, if you haven't already done so, you absolutely want to register for our caseless construction course. In my opinion, and I've been doing this for 25 years now, in my opinion, this is the single most important thing that you can do to have the biggest benefit in preparing for the exam. It's a one-day course. You can do it from home, online. So if you haven't done it already, please do so. Why do I feel so strongly about that? It's for the following reasons. Number one, the cases represents 50%, 50% of your exam. Half an hour in each of OB/GYN and office is dedicated to your case list. And totally in the case of office, you can choose which cases you want. But in all three sections, you can choose how you word the cases that go down and how you write down these cases. And the simple, and I'm sure I've mentioned this before, the simple example is, If you want to have you got an Rh negative patient, well, I will tell you from reviewing case lists, 95% of you don't even think about putting RH negative status down on a case list, and in the OB section, obviously. And why not? I see immunization is a wonderful conversation to have. So, number one, think about these things. All of you have the occasional RH negative patient. So if you've got an RH negative patient, and let's say she came to you at 39 weeks, virtually no prenatal care, and she never got Rogam, that's the perfect case, because the way you write it down is to say RH negative, and in the treatment column, you put down Rogam not given with an exclamation mark. Why am I making a big deal out of this? Because on every single case that you enter into your case list, you got to look at the case, read the case as if you're the examiner seeing it for the first time. And if you're reading that a patient is RH negative and she never got Rogam, there's one question you are compelled to ask, and that is, why not? And once you've got that question coming your way, the conversation on IC immunization will surely follow right behind. So the point that I make is you can, to a large extent, control what kind of questions you can expect to get based on what you've written down on paper. And that's why I tell you to come to the cases construction course, because we tell you exactly how to do that. I will just tell you briefly at this point, don't be fearful of your complications. I'm sure I've mentioned this before. They might ding you for failing to realize there's a complication or failing to deal with the complication. But they won't ding you for having the complication. Every one of us has complications. You know, some of you have uterine perfs on your cases, and you feel terrible, and you're thinking to yourself, well, what am I going to say? It looks so bad. What am I going to do? Be comforted that your examiner has had way more uterine perfs than you've had. It's part of the territory that we play in. So be comfortable with your complications. And certainly, if you do have any questions or concerns in this regard, feel free to get in touch with me. Drop me an email. Send it to info@examro.com. Just put attention Dr. Shamroth. And in the body of the email, just post what your question or concern is. Attach the preferably de-identified page which contains the case in question. Then add your contact telephone number or numbers where I can reach you and your time zone. Because 9 times out of 10, I would prefer to speak with you in terms of giving my response rather than just emailing you the answer. It's more in-depth, it's more personalized, and you need to understand, you know, I can get the exact same question from 3 candidates, and I could give 3 completely separate answers, because each of those 3 candidates have different comfort levels to handle a particular conversation. So it's I far prefer to speak to candidates rather than email them responses. That being said, there are rare occasions where I will email a response, so just be aware of that. As far as case lists are concerned, tomorrow's the 1st of April, 3/4 way through collecting cases. I will tell you from experience that probably, and don't feel comforted by this, some of you might be, and I don't want you to get the wrong message, 50% of candidates probably haven't even started entering cases into their case list. And probably another 10, 20% have only put in 2 or 3 months' worth. But I don't want you to be amongst that crowd. I really feel with 3 months left to go of collecting cases, you want to get to having entered all cases within 4 or 5 weeks of having managed them. So in other words, you want to pretty much aim in the next week or two to have all patients that were managed in the month of February and earlier entered in your case list. That's number one. Number two, in the office section, that you can complete now. Choose 40 interesting cases. Keep in mind, you can put up to a maximum of 2 cases in any one category. Keep in mind, some categories will have 0, some categories will have 1, some will have 2. But make sure they're not duplicates one of the other. So in the vaginal discharge category, don't put 2 cases of candidiasis. Put one of yeast and one of trichomonas. Make sure they're different because it's a different conversation. Also, I will tell you, in the preventative care section, I encourage you to put 2 cases because it's a pretty important section as far as the exam is concerned. But if you're going to put 2 cases in the preventative care section, let the one be a 20-year-old, 25-year-old, and the other a postmenopausal 60-year-old, because the conversation that you will have with the examiner in a preventative care discussion is different for those 2 age groups. So and as you select your cases for the office section, make sure that they comprise the following 3 criteria. Number one, where possible, make sure it's interesting for the examiner. Make sure, perhaps even more important, that the case that you select in the office section revolves around a conversation on a topic that you're comfortable to discuss. And thirdly, as you look at all your cases, try as much as possible to avoid conversational duplicates. You can have the same kind of case in 2 different categories in the office section, but the questions really are much the same. So try to avoid that. Make sure that every case adds a new clinical dimension to your case list. And finish it now. Really important. It's a third of your cases behind you. I want to also mention some people, I don't know where they heard this from, but certainly not from me. Don't emphasize, if you're going to choose a patient with amenorrhea, which I encourage, but don't be clever and smart and choose a case of primary amenorrhea. Because now you've just invited questions on delayed puberty. What is normal pubertal development? What's the differential diagnosis of a blind-ending pouch? Let's have a conversation on Mullerian agenesis or testicular feminization. These are places that we as generalists generally don't like to go. So make it easy for yourself. If you're going to choose the case of amenorrhea, which I would encourage you to do so, make sure it is secondary amenorrhea. Another point, most of you listening in, I know, are aware of this, but I've been a little surprised by how many people, percentage-wise, small but still way more than usual, misunderstood one fact. regarding caseless construction, and it's a very major problem. And if you make this mistake, it may cost you a year. So it's, please forgive me, but it's important that I make sure that all of you listening in, do not make this mistake. It says in the OBN, GYN caseless categories, the OBN and GYN sections, forgive me, that you've got to have a minimum of 20 cases that count. Some people have come up to me and said, well, that means if I put, let's say, for example, two cases in every category, I need to fill 10 categories that'll give me 20 cases, and I'm done for GYN, for example. And this is a very serious misreading. The requirement is as follows. You need to put down, and I'm talking about GYN, we'll talk briefly about OB in a moment, but with respect to GYN, you've got to put down every single GYN case that you did not in the office, whether it was in the OR, same-day surgery center. You've got to list every case, and your medical records has to sign off on that. If you are not, if you don't do that, you can actually get yourself into serious trouble, and you don't even want to go down that road. I'm not even going to share with you the issues, but don't make that mistake. If having done that, having listed every case that you've done, and then you don't yet have 20 cases that quote-unquote count, then your case list is inadmissible. And then you've got a couple of choices. You can either collect an 18-month case list, which I strongly encourage you not to do, or alternatively, which I strongly encourage you to do, you can go back to residency or maybe fellowship, but mostly residency, and pick and choose enough cases to get you over that 20 minimum. Because if you're at less than 20, your cases is inadmissible, and they will not let you sit the exam. So that's where the 20 is. It's not what is required on the case list. It's what is required to make sure that your case list has enough depth and breadth to allow it to be admissible in the exam. So please don't make that mistake. All right, I've been talking on my own pretty much. What I'm going to do now, I'm going to unmute everyone in a minute. Folks, please let me ask you, before I do so, please make sure there's no background noise. If you're in a room where there is noise, please go to another room, because it'll spoil it for you and everyone else. So please make sure there's no background noise. That's number one. Number two, I'm going to ask, when I tell you, not right now, I'm going to ask any of you, if you've got any questions whatsoever, to just shout out your first name, and I'll acknowledge you, and then we can have the conversation. If no one volunteers, then we're pretty much done, but I certainly hope that's not the case. So I hope that there are some of you who have got some questions that you're interested in asking. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to unmute us all, and I've asked you folks, whoever's interested, please call out your first name. So here we go. 3, 2. There we go. Anyone want to call out their name and ask a question? Go ahead. Come on, folks, don't be shy. Just the first name. You can remain anonymous.
Can you hear me? This is...
Yes. Who is that?
Yes. This is Oz.
Oz, hi. Thank you so much for volunteering. Go ahead. What's your question?
I'm just curious of what kind of questions I may be asked, but on my list, I will have a 23-year-old G1, P1, with history of long-term abnormal uterine bleeding, refractory to medical management, who requested a total hysterectomy. And I was probably the third or fourth provider that she had gone to. And I go by the stance of patient autonomy. And I, after talking to her about all of the risks associated and all of her potential options, we proceeded with a total hysterectomy. So my question is...
I know exactly your concern. Go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm wanting to know, again, I will bring up patient autonomy and significant counseling, but are they going to, what other questions will they ask with regards to her age and the question of, well, how are you going to counsel her about regret if she were to come back? The other aspect that I didn't mention is she does have pretty significant bipolar disorder and a dysfunctional family history. She was herself a child of, she was of adoptive parents. I think she was in the foster system. Mm-hmm. And so my first question is, do I include all of that information in my
presentation? So as a general principle, that's a second separate issue. And in my opinion, I would advise, and folks, the principles that, for all of you listening in, the principles that I'm sharing with all are really relevant for everyone. This issue of psychosocial disruption, it muddies the waters a little bit. The most juicy of conversations that you could ever wish for is a low-age hysterectomy. It's beautiful from the exam point of view. It's fantastic. Okay? So I would tend to keep it focused on that. And the psychosocial element does have value, but it's not essential and totally essential to the case. I would tend to leave it off, maybe, but be comfortable if you feel there's a need at the time to mention it verbally. But I want to, this is such an important issue that you brought up, Oz. I'm very grateful that you did. You all heard Oz state that, you know, she counseled her, spoke to her several times, and she respected patient autonomy. So, Oz, we're going to role play. You'll be the candidate. I'm going to be the examiner, okay?
Okay.
And I'm going to take you through a series of questions. Do your best to handle them. Let's see how it goes.
Okay.
Let's just assume that this patient does not have a cervical cancer, does not have a postpartum hemorrhage C-section hysterectomy scenario, and is not a transgender, because those are some of the more common cases where you'll get a young age hysterectomy. So I'm getting those off the field. This was did you say for AUB in essence?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. So yeah. Let me ask you, Oz, if she didn't have AUB but just said she's bothered immensely, and it's causing her depression. She doesn't want to have periods, and she doesn't want to have a uterus. She's never going to have any more children. She's, I'm making this up, she's in a permanent relationship. Oh, no, she's in a lesbian relationship. They're not going to have kids. She's 23 years old. You've counseled her as best as you can. And she remains adamant she wants a hysterectomy. Would you do it for her? Because you mentioned patient autonomy.
Yes.
So would you do it?
I would do it. I have done it.
Okay. Stop. Don't say that in the exam. I will do it, and I've done it. Sounds like you've got a series of four or five cases. Next question. She's not 23, but she's 21. Same case. Will you do a hysterectomy?
If I have counseled her on all of her options.
Same thing. Everything. You've done everything.
Yes. I maintain my stance on patient autonomy.
Okay.
If that's
okay.
Yes.
You tell me, what do you guess, what do you suppose my next question is?
The patient.
I know everyone else knows exactly where I'm going, but you're in the bubble right now. Can you see where I'm going with the next question?
What if the patient comes back in 10 years?
No. The same patient, same scenario, everything is identical, except for one fact. She's 19. Will you do the hysterectomy?
She is over the age of 18 and is an adult.
Okay, I'm going to make it easier for you. She is 17, since you raised that 18-year age issue. You said she's a para one. She's an emancipated minor. Mm-hmm. She's 17. She can make these decisions. Would you do it for her?
Yes.
Okay. What's my next question? You understand what's happening here? I'm just pushing you to the wall.
Yeah.
15. What are you going to do? Are you starting to get a little uncomfortable?
I am definitely getting uncomfortable.
This is exactly what will happen in the exam. They will push you to your quote-unquote breaking point. So what are you going to do at the age? I'll make it easier for you. She's not 15. She's 16. 17, you would do it. What about 16?
Well, this is a portion when it comes with legal issues. I don't know what each state.
She's an emancipated minor. She's a Malta. Okay. She's not a nullip. She's had a baby.
Okay. And that's true for every state?
I believe so, but let's assume you're in a state where that is true. Listen, let's make her 14. I don't want to just waste time. Is there any age when you would not do it? Let's say she delivered her first kid at age 13.
Mm-hmm.
The examiner is thinking as you say, I would do a hysterectomy on a 17-year-old, and I'm thinking about it on a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old. What do you think the examiner is thinking about you as a candidate? Be honest, really be honest. What do you think the examiner is thinking in his or her head?
The reason I brought this question up is because a paternalistic view of medicine for so many years, and I think there has been...
That was chucked out the window.
Okay.
It used to be paternalistic 50 years ago, but that's
correct.
You're not allowed to be paternalistic. Everything
correct.
Has to be by mutual decision making.
Right. The reason I brought this up was because so many older providers declined her. We spent a very long time and more than...
You're still defending the notion that you did the right thing. And I haven't passed comment yet. I'm just playing an academic exercise with you.
Right.
I'll give you my opinion at the end. But you're still defending the position of having done hysterectomy on a 22-year-old, and you've said you would do it on a 17-year-old, and you haven't really answered me about any age under 17. And you've admitted you're getting very uneasy about this line of questioning. And folks, I have no doubt there are others among you listening in who have got patients without those prerequisite diagnoses in their 20s. And everything that we're raising here is relevant for you. I will go so far as to say, if you've got a patient under age 40, from a philosophical point of view, this would be regarded as very aggressive surgery. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, look, I'm going to give you a model response of how to handle this. And I would say a third of people listening in probably have, maybe more, have something similar on their cases. So listen up. And also, those of you who don't have it, you might still get it, or maybe you won't be so comfortable to do it. If you've got anything like this scheduled in June, push them over to July. That way they won't be on your case list. But this is how I would respond. So I'm putting myself in your shoes right now. And they say, Dr. Oz, tell me, present case number 16. And I'm going to ask you what you think of my presentation, Oz. And you need to be honest, okay? I would respond by saying, case number 16, this was a very interesting and tough case because you will notice she was a 23-year-old who landed up doing a hysterectomy. I regard this as very aggressive surgery, but there were tremendous extenuating circumstances. This, first of all, what do you like about that introduction? How does that sound to you, Oz?
I mean, are we allowed to present like that, or?
Absolutely, just be yourself. Not only are you allowed, but I encourage it. You're going to have a conversation with your examiner. You can tell that this was an upsetting case for me. I would say, you know, this was an upsetting case because she had a hysterectomy. I regard this kind of a case as an absolute failure. You say that, quote unquote, you say that. And then you're going to say, but there were tremendous extenuating circumstances. And you list them. She had been to, I was the fourth OBGYN whom she saw. The other thing had declined. She had failed multiple modalities of conservative medical therapy. I'm happy to list them all for you. She also failed conservative options of therapy. I'm happy to discuss those with you. And at the end of the day, I went even further to get a psychological or psychiatric evaluation. I sent her to a pain clinic to rule out musculoskeletal disorders. And at the end of the day, everything was negative. And it was a very tough decision for me because while I feel patient autonomy is critical, I will not let that force me to do something I'm not comfortable with. If I got to that situation, I would offer the patient the telephone number of another OBGYN in town. But I felt that I'd seen this patient multiple visits over an extended period of time. Her quality of life was so miserable. And her social situation was such that as young as she was, and as much as I didn't really feel totally comfortable with it, I felt it was the best thing for the patient. I went ahead and did the hysterectomy, and I got to be honest, since doing that, I've seen her, and she is like a new person. So I did this. This is not my routine. I do feel this is a very unfortunate outcome, but in this particular patient, it was the right decision. How does that sound to you, Oz?
I mean, I wouldn't say this is an unfortunate outcome for this patient.
No, the concept of doing, no, you're right. The concept of doing a hysterectomy on a 23-year-old is an unfortunate situation, but I feel it was called for in this patient, in this case.
Okay.
Could you be comfortable to present like that? You've got to present, because this is what's going to, they're going to ask you. It's not if, but when they ask you. They're going to ask you this. Uh-huh. You've got to be ready to roll. Okay? So what I want to tell you, two things. Number one, we have a 25-minute or so session at our definitive board prep course, where we will discuss this exact issue, how to defend, amongst other things, a low-age hysterectomy, and by low-age, as I mentioned, anything under age 40, and the younger, how much more so, the low-age, low-parity tube ligation, how to defend that and present that case. And we know statistically that 95% of you attending these teleseminars will come to that definitive board prep course. But I want you to know this issue that you've raised, Oz, will be covered in that course. Did you have any other questions on this case?
And did you say young age of 40, 40 or 14?
When it comes to a young age hysterectomy, any patient who gets a hysterectomy, not for transgenderism surgery, not for postpartum C-hist, and not for cancer, because those are life-saving conditions. I'm excluding those off the, putting them off the table. But any patient who gets a hysterectomy under age 40, 40, philosophically would be regarded as a low-age hysterectomy. 40.
And you are including women who desire a tubal ligation in that category?
The tubal ligation conversation is a different conversation. And for tubal ligation, the age, I mean, it's not a black and white cutoff, but it starts becoming an exam issue at age 25. It's a different age cutoff, obviously. And if you got a woman who's a 25 or less and a para 2 or less, that's a risk. Those are risk factors for tubal ligation regret. Why do I choose age and parity? Because those are two pieces of information that have to go down on paper. You've got to put it down on the case. So, you know, if you've got a low age, low parity tubal, then you've got to know how to defend it. But the low age for a tubal ligation is 25, not 40. And when I say 40, please understand, you're not going to see this in a textbook. It's just at what point does it start seeming aggressive, to be aggressive? And at 40, below 40 for a hysterectomy, below 25 for a tubal. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions on this case?
I do not. Thank you.
Did you be honest? Did you find this approach helpful or not? Be honest.
It's definitely helpful, but I personally disagree that it is aggressive.
Okay.
But again, I need to pass the test. So from a from a purely scientific standpoint, I disagree. From an ethical standpoint,
okay. So let me pose a question to you, and this is for you as well as everyone listening in. you were the fourth person that she came to. The first three declined her surgery. Am I correct?
Yes, but I'm also in a conservative state, and all the other providers she saw were older gentlemen doctors, which I think there is a difference now
I think you're being overly harsh on your colleagues. Okay.
Right, which I can't.
But that's okay.
Not something I'm going to say out loud. But that's
you can't go down. Whether you are or not is actually totally irrelevant. And I perhaps should arguably not have said that, because at the end of that, it's irrelevant. Just give yourself the path of least resistance. That's really what I'm trying to get you to do. You understand? You're not necessarily holding a majority opinion here. And I can just tell you from the exam point of view, philosophically, I emphasize the word philosophically, it will appear to the examiner, on average, as being rather aggressive. Okay. So, folks, if you've got cases like this, I want to make one further recommendation. You should have as much mock oral exam exposure as you can. If you've only got colleagues and friends to do it with, fine. But preferably do it with people, seniors to you, whom you would feel embarrassed if you got a question wrong, okay? You look up to. Get as much exposure as you can, because you need to be smooth in your presentation. You need to be comfortable in your presentation. And so I want you to have as much mock oral exposure on this case as you possibly can. Does that make sense to you, Oz? Okay. All right, we've got some background noise there, but Oz, is there any other questions that you've got?
Let me look at my case.
So I'm talking about any other questions on this particular case.
I'm just looking at her history a little bit more. I do not.
Okay. If you do have any questions, feel free to get in touch with me. I'd be happy to chat with you further about this. Understand, folks, for everyone and for you, Oz, from the exam point of view, I am thrilled that you've got this case on your list. I'm not concerned or worried. I'm very happy you've got this case on the list. Why? Because I know the conversation you're going to have. And because you can predict the conversation, you can prepare for it. And that's worth gold in the exam. So I'm actually very pleased you've got this. Don't worry. Don't have gray hairs over this. Okay, Oz?
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Folks, listen, we're going to call it a day. This did go. Yes, I got another question. Who is that?
Yeah, this is Justin. And
yes, Justin, go ahead.
I was wondering. Yeah, I have a 75-year-old pair of zero. It's almost the same situation. Super sick lady, heavy vaginal bleeding, huge fibroid uterus, end-stage renal disease on hemodialysis, on anticoagulation due to an upper extremity DVT, and failed all conservative management. Right? So, you know, I took her to the operating room for a TAH BSO, and came back with endometrial hyperplasia, huge fibroid uterus, and then post-op day 18, she did well. She went home back to her nursing home post-op day 4 or 5, and then she came back post-op day 18 in septic shock with a huge pelvic abscess. And it turns out to be
drug-resistant
E. coli, and she didn't make
it.
So
yeah.
You know,
very
I
easy to defend.
terrible.
No, you feel right? terrible, but it's easy. Let me ask you a question. Folks, a lot of you, I'm pleased you brought this up as well. A lot of you are in a similar situation, and I encourage you to honestly pose the following question to yourself. So what's your name again, your first name? Hello?
Justin, J-U-S.
Justin, thank you. Yes. Yeah, so Justin, I want you to be honest and pose the following question. If you tomorrow were to be in the exact same situation with this patient or another patient, everything is identical, would you go ahead and do the surgery? And again, please be totally honest.
Yeah, I think her quality of life was significantly hindered by
this. You're being too defensive.
Yes.
Would you or would you not?
Yes.
Yes or no? Yes. And there's your answer. Yes. And you're 100% correct. It's terrible to have bad outcomes, especially a death. But you've just answered the question because you've just said, even if you were to be confronted with a death down the road, given her circumstances that you were presented with, you would do it again, which says you're doing the right thing. And again, this point that I'm going to mention comes back to what Oz was questioning. In the exam, you go ahead and say, you know, these were the risks, these were the benefits. There's no question this patient was at serious risk of, I was actually worried about poor mobilization and a DVT and a PE. I was surprised that she developed septic shock, but I evaluated the risk-benefit ratio, and while the risks were substantial, her quality of life was such that this was necessary. And I've got to go one step further. You say this in the exam. Even knowing that she subsequently died, if I were confronted with this exact same kind of patient again in the future, I believe I would do exactly the same thing, because the decision to move forward with the surgery, in my opinion, was correct. It's very powerful when you say that. You're saying, excuse the expression, shit happens. And this was a tough one. Your back was to the wall. Gyn oncologists do uber aggressive surgery on sometimes very sick patients. And yes, speak to them about patients dying on them. But they're compelled to go for it because their quality of life or quantity of life on the patient is on the line. So with this kind of a patient, you're in the same category. So just be careful, comfortable to talk about risk-benefit ratio, and I think you should be fine. It's a great conversation piece again. Does that answer your question, Justin?
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Very good. Folks, I'm gonna call it a day. And we actually went beyond 45 minutes, which was very surprising. But thank you to Oz and Justin. I appreciate that. Both were very relevant cases. Folks, I want to encourage you, if you have not attended our cases construction course yet, do so immediately. It really is important. I can't emphasize that enough. And finally, if you are going to be attending our definitive board prep course, it'll help us if you registered earlier rather than later, in terms of making sure that we can have a hotel block at a reduced price. We can get our numbers in order, because what's happened in the past, we're able, because we bring in a lot of patrons to the hotel, that we sign a hotel contract where they give us accommodation at a reduced rate, and we can pass that on to you folks. So there comes a point where if it's too late in the calendar, we can't do that. So if you're thinking of registering, please let us know sooner rather than later. It really doesn't help us to help you folks as far as that hotel block is concerned. So, folks, that's it. Our next teleconference will be in 2 weeks, which makes it the 14th of April. I think that's tax day, isn't it? I can't recall. In any case, 14th of April, Sunday, 2 weeks from today, we'll do this all again. And, folks, please volunteer to be on the hot seat. Submit cases, questions, concerns, issues that you're not sure how to handle in the exam. I mean, you heard two very interesting cases come up today, and I encourage you to do this. So, and I'd also, you know, I did it, I think, once earlier this year. I'm going to ask you folks again, once again, could you please send an email right now when you hang up to info@exampro.com. Just rate this teleseminar from 1 to 5, 1 being lousy, 5 being excellent. It helps us tremendously. And if you can do it literally right now, it'll take you 20 seconds. Send it to info@exampro.com, rate it on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 is lousy, 5 is excellent. And if you want to add any further comments, we really do appreciate it. So, folks, we'll do this all again in 2 weeks' time. Thank you for all of you for joining, and I look forward to it again in 2 weeks. Thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye.